Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad that you were able to tune in today, and we will be talking as usual about the latest commercial real estate news, along with some tax planning strategies. And just because you hear something on the air today that you think might fit your facts and circumstances, or that you like what you're hearing, please don't rush out and try to implement these strategies or these opportunities on your own. There's more than a few places that you can thought you heard something, and the outcome will not be correct if you don't dot some I's and cross some T's along the way. For those of you that don't have current advisors that understand how to analyze these creatures, these real estate private partnership syndications, or some advanced tax strategies, feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER.com, and complete our client forms at the top right. There's a link up there at the top right. And if you will fill out at least the first one, the first step, that'll give us enough to have you then go schedule a call. It's at the far right link, I believe. And we'll be happy to spend a few minutes with you on the phone discussing your specific facts and circumstances and how we might sync up with helping you achieve your goals and objectives. Boy, a lot going on this week in Washington. I'm going to try to avoid the most political of those goings on and simply stay with some of the more mundane commercial real estate news. And you can also access many of these articles on our companion website for the Be a Planner site. It's BAPlannerShow.com. And if you'll go to BAPlannerShow.com and click the resources link up at the top right, it'll take you to a page that has a heading of current news, and we will... Let's see. Let's take a look here. We'll go through not all of these, but we'll go through a few of them. Let's see. Boy, there's a couple of them I put on the list this week just because it was like doesn't really have anything to do with what we consult on, but it was just interesting, and I thought wow. For one, the Nebraska Furniture Mart building that's going in up in, let's see, where is this? Somewhere in Dallas, I believe. Let me get that article up here. Let's see, is it Fort Worth or Dallas? Somewhere. It's a Warren Buffett outfit, which that makes sense because it has a lot of furniture and it is Nebraska. And the store itself, and I'm assuming this isn't a misprint, 1.2 million square feet. I think that likely would fit several IKEAs or Costcos inside. It's going to include a full service hotel, 250 room, plus a 30,000 square foot city-owned convention center. That's not that big. And then 250,000 square feet of retail It'll be the fifth store for the 85-year-old Nebraska Furniture Mart, and it is billed as a one-stop shop for the home. Boy, I hope so, with a million-plus square foot or square feet, specializing in furniture, flooring, appliances, and electronics, and offers services including interior design, delivery, and installation. So just when you thought the commercial real estate was dead, here comes a Texas-sized operation to take some more of your money. Let's see. The other article I wanted to mention is the first article on the list, Houston-based Heinz. That would be the former company of Gerald Heinz. He's passed away. I believe it's his son, Jerry, that runs that. I think it's interesting. My first exposure to Gerald Heinz tangentially was when I worked at Arthur Anderson there in downtown Houston, and we officed in the Penzel building. And I guess for those of you that go back a long time in the Houston days, you remember, you know, that was one of his signature first buildings. I think the Shell Plaza may have been before Penzel, but anyway, Penzel was just another block or so, two blocks maybe down the street. Really nice. Everything Heinz has ever touched has been first class. And in any event, I happened to buy his biography here recently. It came out 4 or 5 years ago, and I had missed it, but I saw it when I was on Amazon one day here a month or two ago and bought it. And boy, it's worth having just for the images, the photos, the color, the quality, paper, etc. Again, just like the man himself, that book is a first-class production. But in any event, the current version of Heinz has apparently landed a $1.3 billion Tampa Stadium mixed-use project. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that may be, let's see, is that for the baseball team? Let's see, the Tampa Bay Rays. I believe that is the baseball team. But in any event, hats off to Heinz. Again, quality organization, and I don't know if they still are, but they used to be a Arthur Anderson client back in the day. But in any event, that project is going to include 5,700 multifamily units plus 1.4 million square feet of office space. And that's a considerable amount of any one of those categories is a considerable number, especially given that it's the smaller submarket there of Tampa, or smaller market, rather. Let's see here. What else did I have on the list for this week? Go back to my list here. As is becoming more commonplace in the office loan market these days, there's an article about how the Kushner companies, this would be the Kushner is in Ivanka, or Ivanka, I said it right the first time, Trump's husband. And he's, I don't think he's connected with the company any longer, but there's an article about a massive loan default called the Dumbo office project. And it's, I don't know how much of this is a negotiating ploy, but it's a $180 million loan on an office campus. And, you know, again, it's hard to tell until these things actually play out how much of it is a poker game versus how much is actual getting ready to happen kind of information. Let's see. Article about that Texas is the fourth biggest real estate market in the country. I don't think that surprises too many of us. And it's crazy, though, when you actually see an article that pegs, and we're talking about residential real estate, it pegs the value of all the residential parcels in the state at being roughly $3.3 trillion. That's a lot of houses. Behind number one, California at $10 trillion, and number two, Florida at nearly $4 trillion. I would say that that's, Texas is doing pretty good with the working man's class of real estate versus number one and number two. Dallas-Fort Worth is the largest portion of the Texas value, with a residential market worth $956 billion. And Houston comes in there second among Texas cities, market value of $767 billion. Trailing Houston was Austin at $428 billion. And San Antonio at $252 billion. And again, that's an incredible number of homes, and I guess apartments is included in that that calculation as well. Let's see. What's next here? Let's see, there was one other article I wanted to mention. Oh, there's an article that was in Kipling, or it's actually been almost 2 months ago, but I still thought it had some interesting points. And, you know, I hear on other shows, some of the real estate mentor shows that are more about motivational suggestions than necessarily the facts of investment grade real estate. Some have both, but there seems to be a concerted effort to help you avoid working. And, you know, I understand that to some people, you know, retirement, quote unquote, means that you're no longer going to an office, whereas for others, like myself, you know, I work every day and enjoy what I'm doing, and frankly, I think I'd feel lost without doing what I'm doing. That said, do I change what I do on a day-to-day basis from time to time? You bet. I mean, to me, the essence of retirement for anybody, and this is why I maintain I retired when I was 25 years old, that's when I started my own CPA practice, and that's when I decided each day who, what, when, where, etc. I was going to work on. And to me, doing what you want to do when you want to do it is retirement. And I don't care if that means you get up at 6:30 to go to a cubicle by 8 o'clock, and you provide value, you create value for somebody that's willing to pay you money. Real money that you can invest with, you can pay your bills with, etc. There's nothing shameful about that. I don't care if you're 19 years old or 99 years old, God forbid. But the bottom line is, it's what you're doing because you want to do it, not because you have to do it. But in any event, so why are you still working is the title of this article. And there's essentially, I think they say, three reasons. Well, there's a handful of categories, so maybe it's more than three. First category is I must keep working. And the example is I'm 42 years old, have three children, two dogs, one wife, and endless expenses. Although I'm doing a good job saving for the future, I'm far from financially able to walk away. So in this case, this person has to keep working. Second category is I probably should keep working, meaning that you're borderline able, I guess, to say, hey, I'm there, but I'm not quite there financially, and there's too much risk to pull the plug today. And then there's the category three, and this is the one I was referencing just a few minutes ago. I want to keep working. Are you in a good position financially but still working because you love your work? I certainly see this plenty, where 60-year-olds can easily retire and yet grind away 40, 50, or 60 hours a week. Two more. Category four is I'm afraid to retire. We see individuals all the time who are afraid to retire. Heck, we get hired to solve this exact issue. Now, that's the people writing the article. That's not me. I don't get hired to help you, quote, retire, unless it's on the financial level. But in any event, I can understand that. I've had clients that retired realize they had made, and I mean they quit working, basically, and it was great for several months, and they realized they'd made a big mistake, and they wanted to find something that would let them, quote, work, unquote, again, but it was at their discretion, and that seemed to work. And then there's the fifth category, which is probably more people than you would think, which is I'm working, but I don't know why I'm still working. And in that case, I suppose, there's consultants or psychologists or whoever out there that can put you through some drills to help you figure out what the answer to that question is. And maybe then you move into one of the other four categories. Anyway, it's time to take a break. Let's go ahead and take our first break. And we'll be back here in a few minutes with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words. Better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
With big dreams and faded dreams.
Big dreams
and faded dreams.
Hey, welcome back to more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I think we finished most of the newsworthy items I had to discuss. And so I wanted to pivot just a bit and talk a little bit about what is a real estate private partnership syndication and why do we focus on those when it comes to the planning that we try to help clients who are behind on investing for their retirement wealth, their future. The two risks, there's a multitude of factors that converge seemingly when we get into discussing why of real estate private partnership syndications and the how and the when, all that we can help you with, but it's very important that you understand why this option as opposed to index funds or individual stocks, God forbid, or assorted other options. You know, annuities can be a great option as long as you've got a lot more money than it's going to take you to invest in real estate private partnership syndications. And then the annuity is not necessarily going to generate significant amount of additional wealth. And what we're typically faced with is someone that comes to us, they've got several hundred thousand dollars in a 401 or an IRA, and they are, I don't know, mid-50s maybe, maybe not. You know, we have people that are 60 and older that are in that particular situation. But in all cases, they realize they've done some math, even on the back of a napkin, and figured out, hey, with the current life expectancies, which for those of you that may not know, the IRS's life expectancy tables now have males going out to 85 or 86 years old, females 87 to 88. It's a long time. And speaking of females, for those of you that may not be aware, I noticed just several hours ago that the announcement came out of Washington about Senator Dianne Feinstein passing away at 90 years old. 90 years old. Now think about that. That is a good 25 to 30 years past the point that most people think of retirement. They think, well, you know, I'm going to retire at, say, 65. I might live to 75. I've got $1 million or so in my retirement accounts. Surely that's enough. And what they don't realize is, one, it's highly likely with the advances in medical technology, etc., that they're going to live much longer. And again, even the IRS says that, you know, you're going to be 85 to 90. And when you think about, when you put a pencil to the math on how much more it's going to take you to live, and you're assuming you don't have that catastrophic long-term health care or chronic illness event that lands you in a say a skilled nursing facility, then, you know, if you have those events happen and you don't have long-term health care insurance, which is very expensive to get it if you hadn't already started before you're, say, mid-60s, and you'll find that you probably don't have near as much money as you think when you consider the longevity risk. You know, the issue is, will you outlive your money versus your money outliving you, which is what we would prefer. And then the other big risk, if you're not aware, we'll give you some of the details, is the tax rate risk. So not only do you have a risk of how long and how much, you've got a further risk, which is, what's the net amount that I'm going to have? And if you use my example earlier, when I said a common set of facts is someone that has $1 million or they target $1 million at retirement. Well, that's not really $1 million being their share. And the problem is, unless you're a magician or a fortune teller and a good one, you don't have any idea. You have no clue what your tax rate's going to be as you get further out and into retirement and on into the rest of your life. And when you look at how much money you have to take out, whether it's the required minimum distribution that you have to make, or it's simply the amount of money you need to pay your bills, when you factor in the tax effect, you got a lot less money than you think you do. And you combine that with the fact that the country's financial health is horrible. You know, we just crossed the $33 trillion mark in cumulative, and this is just the part that we actually admit to if you look at the nation's balance sheet, $33 trillion. And I understand that, you know, there's $7 or $8 trillion of that that's intergovernmental agencies that have borrowed some of that money. The domestic piece that U.S.-based companies or investors have borrowed is another huge chunk, and that it's quote, only about $8 or $9 trillion that is truly, you know, foreign or international, other countries, et cetera, debt holdings of our debt, of our public debt. But it still has to be paid. Whoever holds it, they're counting on being paid. And in the meantime, they're counting on getting paid the interest on the debt. And based on those in the know, these are people that track this sort of thing, government related employees, and then people that used to be government employees. David Walker, the former comptroller of the Treasury or of the country, has projected that it's 2029 to 2030 when the remaining piece of the discretionary budget has been expended. So there's nowhere else to go in terms of how do we pay just the interest on the debt. It's going to be roughly $1 trillion just this year, approximately. And a lot of that depends on where inflation stays. But, boy, when we first, or when we, here in the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years, most of the debt that we've issued has been at relatively low rates. Well, now those rates have doubled or more than doubled, and all of a sudden, instead of spending $300 or $400 million, we're spending $1 trillion a year in interest expense. And so that's on the one hand. And so part and parcel is, well, how do we get more money to be able to print more money that we can loan? And, of course, the answer to that is taxes. Got to raise the tax rate. Unless we can find something we can sell, right? I'm not sure what that would be. But in any event, you can pretty much count on taxes going up. I'm going to say not pretty much. You can count on taxes going up. The question is who's going to pay them and how much will the rates go up? But I'll tell you one group that took a look at this that back, it was way back in 2009, it was the Congressional Budget Office. And the Congressional Budget Office analyzed the then three tax brackets. I think they were 10%, 25%, and maybe 35%, if I recall. And they suggested that to fix the deficit problem, you would need to raise the 10% bracket up to 25. The 25% bracket would need to be raised up to 63. And the 35% bracket would need to go to 88. Now, that was assuming you were sharing the load, I presume, pretty much pro rata as you know, at the outset. Now, obviously, there's different levels of number of taxpayers in each of those groupings, but bottom line is we're all going to get soaked much more than the current brackets. That's roughly 150% of the current brackets, and that was in 2009. That's when we had a deficit that was approximately, I don't know, 60% of our GDP, 50 or 60%. Whereas a year ago, we were at 130% of our GDP, which is truly horrifying. And so now, given the current timeline, that's been, 14 years ago? Well, now it's estimated that the brackets would need to go up by 200%. 200% if we want to fix the problem. So factor the higher tax bracket into your $1 million you've got squirreled away, and then tell me if you think you're going to do pretty good on, I don't know, probably 30-35% of that number would net you maybe $300,000 to $350,000 once you pay your tax bill with the required minimum distribution. And don't forget, you know, your Social Security in large measure will be taxable because the RMD, that's the required minimum distribution, is going to be high enough to get you up over the provisional tax bracket that we calculate whether or not our Social Security gets taxed, or at least up to 85% of it. So it gets dire, is what I'm trying to tell you, unless you take steps to sidestep that train. And let's go ahead and take another break, and when we come back, we'll talk about a couple things that you might consider to sidestep that tax train that's coming down the tracks. We'll be right more with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones are made of my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna walk.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And, we were just before the break, we were talking about the dire outlook for those that plan to retire in the next few years and still have their money sitting in pre-tax retirement accounts like 401ks or IRAs or simples, SEPs, etc. And when you look at the amount of money that you will have to start taking out, even though it keeps getting deferred a bit, the real issue in most people's case is, can you defer it? Because I think most people, by the time they hit 70 for sure, will probably need to start tapping those funds. And so, you know, when you pull whatever the number is, let's say you pull $30,000 out, that's going to be hit with a high enough rate of tax once the tax brackets change that it will quickly chew up what you were thinking was your money in that 401. And of course, it gets withheld on the way out. So there's not a whole lot you can do about it. But in any event, but what you can do is before you get there, like think right now, look at converting pre-tax accounts over to Roth. And you've got several choices on how you might go about converting to a Roth IRA, or if you're fortunate enough to have a Roth 401k option, either at your current employer or if you're self-employed, that's the strategy we utilize in most cases. Is we have both, if you think about the self-directed 401, think about a duplex, and you have one side of the house that's pre-tax, the other side is Roth, and we have the ability to do a in-plan conversion whereby you pay the amount of tax that would be due to the IRS on the amount of that conversion. And for those of you that are still thinking that investing in these real estate private partnership syndication transactions might be something you're interested in, let me give you a lot of reasons why you should be interested in them. It's a lot of dollars, okay? And here's the normal scenario. Let's assume you've got your current $1 million 401 or IRA sitting at pick your flavor, Fidelity or UBS, excuse me, Schwab, etc. And if you like the concept of, hey, I want to avoid all this tax down the road, why don't I go ahead and convert in today's lower tax brackets? The tax rates are on sale right now compared to what they're going to be. Remember, we're talking 150 to 200% increased tax rates, tax brackets, to even have a chance at solving the deficit problem. And of course, the deficit problem will never get solved until we learn how to solve the spending problem in Washington, because that's why we have the deficit problem. And we may have all the best reasons in the world for deficit spending. I know just this week, the stopgap measure that was being proposed, I think the White House had put in, I want to say it's like $350 or $380 billion more dollars to go to Ukraine. And I'm not suggesting that that's not a noble cause, very noble. But it's not like we're taking the money out of our pocket and passing it over to Ukraine. No, we're going to sell more T-bills, treasury bonds, to get the money that we're responsible for paying back. It gets added to our deficit, to our tab, and we're sending either hardware, money, food, whatever it is, to Ukraine. And again, I'm not suggesting it's not a noble endeavor. I'm just suggesting we've got to have a certain amount of fiscal restraint. And when you don't even have the right to audit the use of those funds, something's amiss here, right? Why haven't we insisted on that? We're giving money to one of the most corrupt regimes that's ever existed in the history of the world. And for whatever reason, our leadership doesn't feel compelled to suggest that we have some sort of follow-up to make sure the money went where we thought. And even just in the past 6 months, there's been at least two high-ranking officials in the Ukrainian government or military that's been fired. And in part, it was because supposedly they were helping themselves to the funds. And so it's not that we're dreaming about the problem. It's a problem. And I just don't understand, you know, the administration, among others, acts like it's not our money. You know, maybe they don't work for it, but I'll tell you, I've got clients that do. I work for the tax money I pay. And it's just, it's unbelievable to me that we don't have at least a few dozen inspector generals of some sort tracking those funds. I don't understand it. But anyway, the bottom line is another $380 billion, I believe, is the number that was in that proposal that the Senate came up with, which the House rejected. But in any event, so back to what I was suggesting, we won't be fixing anything. We can raise the tax brackets, raise the tax rates, but it's the problem will circle back as we move down the road a few years. Why? Because we keep spending more than we're taking in. And until we fix that issue, you want to move to the Roth as fast as you can. And so, anyway, assuming your money's sitting at Schwab or Fidelity or UBS, etc., if you want to convert to Roth, you pick the phone up, you call your advisor at one of those companies and explain that, hey, I want to move some or all. You don't have to do it all at once. You can split it up. I recommend doing it over, you know, 4, 5, 6 years so that you can try to target maybe the highest bracket that you fall subject to be in the 22 to 24% range. That seems to me to be a pretty logical tax rate, a very desirable tax rate versus, I don't know, 50%, maybe 63 that we mentioned earlier, which is what the middle brackets will need to go up to. And you'll ask your advisor, well, how much am I going to have to pay? And they're going to say, well, gee, let's assume we did, I don't know, $300,000 this year. And in that 24% bracket, what is that, 72,000? I'm doing that in my head, and that's always dangerous. Hang on here, 300 times 0.24. Wow, $72,000. The old noodle's still working pretty good. In any event, that's a lot of money. And so, but let's assume you've been listening to somebody like Nathan Ross or Dan DuBose. Dan's my sidekick that was not able to make it today. And we've been talking about these real estate private partnerships. Or maybe you've got a private company option that it's not something we talk about on the air, but that doesn't mean it's not equally as desirable. I'd have to know more. But bottom line is, if you were to roll your money into a self-directed retirement vehicle, especially the self-directed 401, because you have some side gig income, let's say you get a 1099 for, I don't know, any one of a number of things. You deliver pizza for Gambino's Pizza Company. I don't know. There's plenty of ways you can make money working remotely, consulting, and it would qualify you to have your own self-directed 401 where you are the trustee. You direct the investment of those funds. You decide who, when, where, and how much you're going to invest. And you invest in some of these real estate private partnerships. Now, when you made your call to Fidelity and asked how much it was going to cost you, and they suggested, well, if you did $300,000 on the conversion, it would cost you X. Well, the beauty about real estate private partnerships is you would not use $300,000 as your tax base. Let's assume you invested $300,000 into that self-directed 401, and then you rolled over that much, I'm sorry, into the 401, and then you invested in, you know, three or four real estate private partnerships. So now your money is invested in, it's very important, listen to the term, private company investments. And with private company investments, you don't just pay tax on the basis, the cost basis or investment basis of that asset that you invested in. Why? Because you can't trade that asset. You can't sell it. The partnership decides when they're going to sell that apartment building. So your hands are tied. You have no marketability of that investment until such time as the partnership decides to sell the asset. Further, if it's a typical transaction that might be a, I don't know, $40 or $50 million transaction for a 300, 400 unit apartment building, and you put $100,000 into one of those, you're going to own like 0.89 of 1%, not even 1%. And so you've got no voting control. That's another significant discount. Lack of marketability and no majority control, voting control, gets you massive discounts off of the cost basis. And the reduced valuation, which let's just call it somewhere in the 50 to 60% range, potentially, could be more, could be less. I know with multifamily investments, the whole market is down, valuations are down somewhere in the 20% range this year due to a sordid onslaught of, you know, rising property tax expenses, rising insurance cost. There's others, but those are the two big ones, interest expense. And so you might, on $300,000, you might pay tax on $120,000 or $150,000 as opposed to the entirety of the $300,000. Think about that. That's a massive difference between paying your Roth conversion tax on $300,000 versus, I don't know, $120,000, $140,000, $150,000. Depends on the partnerships you're in and where they sit relative to how much. Are they executing their value add model successfully? They're not experiencing supply chain issues, rising construction cost, etc. And so, you know, the beauty of this investment space, this investment class called real estate private partnership syndications, it's not just the above average rates of return. It's also the ability, you're going to mitigate your tax rate risk, and you're going to mitigate your above average rate of return expectations. You're going to come closer to achieving those with these animals than you are a stock that is like a yo-yo from one day to the next. And at the same time, your money, you know, being able to convert to a Roth, you've got some downside protection. Should the investment not go as we hope, you've got some coverage right out of the chute. So for those of you that are interested in understanding more about this and maybe you seeing an example using your amounts, please go to our website at baplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER.com, and fill out the forms, at least the first couple steps. Now, if you're going to have us look at your retirement issues, I need you to do the client profile and then the retirement profile, and I will at no charge run calculations that we can discuss that will show you just why you should undertake these strategies that I'm talking about with your retirement money. It will double your retirement wealth if you execute correctly, and then you find transactions that fit your objectives. And we can help with that, but we want to be clear. We don't sell investments. We don't go invest your money on your behalf. No, we're going to help you understand what you're signing up for and, allow you to take all the credit, good or bad, for those outcomes. But we won't let you go down a blind path where you didn't understand what the structure represented, what you were to expect. Those issues we ferret out in advance of you writing your check or your 401 trust check to invest in that issue. Hey, something else, I mentioned this a week ago, I'm going to keep mentioning it every week, that I'll offer is if anybody wants to provide us with a couple years of tax returns, we're happy to take a look and see what items you might be leaving on the table from an annual tax reporting perspective. And if you're a small business person, I can almost guarantee you there are things that you're not claiming that you should be that can generate enough extra savings to where it will make sense, will cost justify any engagement we undertake on that front, or we won't take the engagement. Doesn't make sense. We want happy clients that love paying our sometimes exorbitant invoices. Why? Because you recognize you're getting the majority of the savings accruing to your family's net worth. But in any event, let's see. I wanted to mention one other thing about the Roth, tax planning and Roth conversion. You're coming up to the end of the year. The end of the year will be here soon. Don't wait till next March to come to us and say, hey, I want some of that tax planning. I want to save some money on last year's taxes. Not a whole lot that can be done. There are a few things, but come now. At least start talking to us. Okay, you hear the music. We're at the end of the show. It was great, once again, being on the air today. We look forward to Sunday, same station, but at 7 a.m. Sunday morning. We'll be back on the air and hope you can join us. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.